Welcome to Girls Who Read Porn. Please be advised that this podcast contains mature content for mature audiences. The title might have given that away, though. We would also advise you triple check the trigger warnings of each book prior to the episode. And if it's not for you, we'll see you next week. Each episode includes major spoilers, so make sure you read the book and don't say we didn't warn you. With all that in mind, on with the show.
Hi everybody and welcome back to another episode of Girls Who Read Porn. It's me, G, and as usual I am joined by the lovely Ola.
Hello.
Hello, and Betty, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Good. And we are super lucky today to also be joined by Opal Rain. How are you, Opal?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
It's all right. Thank you for coming on. It's so good to like finally get to talk to you in person. I've been a huge fan of your books since they first started coming out, so this is very exciting.
Okay, cool.
So what was it that originally got you into writing romance books?
I have been a reader for now most of my life. I'm not shy about talking about this, so I actually had a reading and writing disability when I was quite young. When I was in year two, I was reading at a kindergarten comprehension level. And so I to get around that, I had a lot of tutors, and then I just forced myself to read a lot. And I finally found genres that I really liked. And I think that was part of the other reason why my reading comprehension wasn't as great. I'm a big believer in that you end up not wanting to read if you're not reading the genres you like, or you're being forced to read genres you don't like. And so I started reading high fantasy, high paranormal. And then when I was a bit older, someone put a spicy novel in my face and I just went, absolutely yes. And I was only 15 at the time. And I just, I gobbled that up and I haven't really quite looked back since. So, yeah. And that's what got me into reading it. And then I'm very artistic. I have done almost every kind of art form you can do, from painting to sculpting to singing to acting. And then I was like, I'm going to try and write. I tried at 19 and then I tried again at 23. And then 26 is when I finally sat down and just bit the bullet and did it.
Oh, nice. Well, you definitely have a talent for it. So that's a good progression.
Yeah.
Were there any like particular authors that you loved, like when you first started reading spicy books?
So Cressley Cole was a big one for me. I have her entire Immortals After Dark series sitting on my bookshelf, and I think I've read them about four times each. except for Monroe. I keep wanting to get to the very last book she published, and I keep just not. So I plan to get to it eventually. But yeah, I'm very excited to read that one once I sit down and read something. Yeah. That Gina Showboarder, G.A. Aiken, I loved her Dragon series, which really inspired me to want to write my own, but that has dragon fucking in it rather than we just do it in their human form. I wanted to see some Daddy Smorg action, and so I wrote it.
Nice. Do you have a current favorite book that you've read recently?
Look, I talk about this series all the time, and I'll talk about it again because I could do it till the cows come home. But I absolutely love Tiffany Roberts' Spider-Mate series. I think for me, it was just a big turning moment for coming out of my shell as an author. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely in love with the series. Every time they show fan art, commissioned art, I get absolutely excited to just stare at it for ages. I love the series. Another big one would be Naomi Lucas's Naga Brides. I really love that series. I love that it's one of the main first presents that I started reading that got me into reading first present, because I was very much like one of those readers that were like, I'll only read it if it's third past or if it's first present. Mm. And then I found out through reading Naomi Lucas that it was really just the authors I was reading, that I just wasn't jiving with the writing style, whereas with Naomi Lucas, I was like, yes, yeah. I really love this. I love the genre. I love what she's writing. Regina Abel. I really love reading my Primating Agency. They're the three authors at the moment that when I have time to read, they've always got a release out. And then my comfort go-to authors. So I immediately just pick up one of their books knowing I'm going to enjoy it. And then I get a bit more experimental when I have more
time. Nice. Yeah, I think, what you said about your like first versus third person. It is like, if it's good enough, you don't really notice a switch between.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that sometimes it can be hard, like, trying to battle that. Like, I grew up reading purely first, third past. And so when I came to a first present, the whole world tipped upside down. I was like, you can't do this. It's wrong. But it's not. It's just a different writing style.
Yeah. How is it that you come up with the ideas for your book? So, like, when you wanted to sit down, like, how did you come up with your Duskwalker series?
So the Duskwalker Bride series was really inspired by a whole bunch of things. The first one I will always say is that I was really inspired by the Ancient Magus's Bride.
I love that.
Which is an anime it features a monster with a skull head, and then Chisei, which is a girl who was basically bought by him, not sacrificed. It's more like she was sold as a bride. But what originally drew me to that series was I was already into skull-headed monsters. I grew up a goth. I love anything that looks dead and decaying, and I want to get, like, one of those sculptures that has one of the snake bones in it. Like, I really like dead skeletal things. Another one would be I was really drawn to Demon Slayer, the anime, and that really helped me get inspired for the monsters and the background and the world. But going back to Tiffany Roberts, it was when I read their book, and I have intense arachnophobia. Like, I am petrified of spiders, absolutely petrified. Like, screaming and will set myself on fire.
You're in the right country.
If it's near me or on me. I know, but, like, I actually think spiders are really cute too. I really do love spiders. I think they're cute, just not anywhere near me, please.
You're also in the right state. Like, you're in the right country in the right state. Like, you've hit the jackpot.
I know. Anyway. I know.
This is so funny because Queensland actually probably has the worst spiders in the country. It's so bad.
We've got a lot up here. There's a lot up here. Like, there's cane toads. Like, that wasn't a thing I had to deal with in Sydney.
No.
And more snakes, apparently.
So many more.
Yeah.
You guys are just a fucking jungle up there.
Well, it is partly rainforest even further up north, isn't it?
Yeah,
so it's just
like,
I also came to a place that's hotter when I hate the heat. I made mistakes all around, okay? It's beautiful up here. It's much prettier than Sydney, but I made a mistake. But when I read their series, I went, well, you could make me fall in love with literally my biggest fear, my only and biggest fear. I think I can make people fall in love with skull-headed monsters. So I gave it a go, and here we are.
Nice. 6 books later.
Yeah, like, the big thing is that I was one of the first authors who wrote about it that doesn't include anything like the W word, which is cultural appropriation, and they've asked for it not to be used. And so I didn't want to read anything that had it. And so I was like, well, there are books with this, but not that isn't wrong to kind of read.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice. Do you personally have a favorite book out of the Duskwalker Bride series so far?
No. I get asked that question every time, and I can't answer it. I love each of the Duskwalkers for their own reasons. I love each of the brides for their own reasons, and I like each story. Like, every book is so different from each other that it's just impossible for me to pick one.
Yeah. Yeah, like, because the way that you've sort of designed the Duskwalkers, how, like, they've all got different levels of humanity and comprehension. So it's so different going from one to another.
Yeah, and they're not, like, getting smarter as we go along or dumber as we go along. It really is just chaos of, like, roll of the dice. This is what you get this time.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Do you have any particular smut scenes from any of the books that you were very proud of when you first wrote them?
Ooh, I haven't been asked that before. I do. So I'll detail one for every book, because there's always one in every book that I'm just like, yes, I love. I really love the scene with Orpheus where he, like, takes Rhea's virginity.
That's Betty's favourite. That's Betty's favourite. So I don't know if you know, we did an episode on that book.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. We read the book and we did an episode on it, and Betty fucking loved that.
Yeah, this is a great scene. I agree with you.
No.
Well, like, my favorite part about it is when we always get, like, the virginal sacrifice, it's always like she's going to be a bird, and then Orpheus is just like, I broke you. Yeah, I really love that, because it kind of breaks that stereotype of that a virgin sacrifice, pure, doesn't always have to mean sexually. And so, you know, when he's like, yeah, not of disease, a lot of people have said that they weren't expecting that. And it's just like, because that's what we always assume, that they want a virgin. Really, he just, please don't give me a sick human. with book two, I really like the painting scene. I even though that sounds like a definite possible UTI, if it gets anywhere it shouldn't, I really loved the whole, like, seeing someone's mark on you, mm-hmm. and having that colourful sort of explosion that Laura really needed.
Yeah.
Now, book three, I have two technically. I really like the three in one. One in every.
One in every hole.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know,
we're really good.
I love that, because yeah, like we get all three, and it's just, yeah, I love that. Yeah. Just like absolutely one person just absolutely filling on. It's great. But I also really like I really want to breed you scene, like that. A scene like that in a book always gets me every single time. So writing it, I was very excited.
Nice.
Now Merrick, a soul to God. I have to explain. You know the Alien Predator movies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the face hugger that comes out.
I've never watched it.
You should watch it.
Okay, so in Alien vs. Predator, there's a little alien that comes out of an egg, and it wraps around the person's head, and, like, gets them attached, and then they lay eggs inside their stomach. I know that sounds absolutely disgusting. However, that was the inspiration. This is the inspiration for the head.
I have so many questions.
That was the inspiration for the head, like the blowjob scene in Assault to Guide. Where his tentacles wrap around her head and, like,
yeah,
I'm
no.
Yeah, which I love. I'm getting Art of That made currently, and I can't wait to show everyone.
That's one thing that I love about you as well. You have so much art in your books. It's so good.
Well, my Patreon helps to pay for it, because it is very costly. Like, some of my pieces cost, you know, upwards of, you know, a roughly around $650 USD, which is can be quite a lot in Australian.
Yeah.
And so my Patreon, everyone who applies to that helps to pay for that. Because otherwise I can't viably prioritize something like that if I don't have additional funds for it, just because I've got a million other
things.
But
it is really awesome to hear that, like, authors are commissioning artists for these pieces. Like, And paying them properly, you know, like, it's really exciting when people do that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I'm heavily against AI art, in any form, unless it goes, but there's a difference between ethical AI and unethical AI, but we're just talking about currently unethical AI, because ethical AI is really good when it comes to disability resources, mm-hmm. and translations and language errors and stuff like that. But when we come to art in itself, I'm quite against AI. Like, I'd rather pay for an artist. I'd rather read a book by someone who is a real person and not something that's going to spew out a whole bunch of mistakes. So I would rather support people who want to support my art form as well. And so, yeah, I always try to pay my artists quite fairly. There's been a couple of times where, like, I'm always searching for a new artist who's like a diamond in the rough, or they're just like somebody who hasn't been discovered yet. And so I always try to guide them to make sure that they are getting paid what they should get paid. So there are, like, commercial, I have to pay commercial licensing on all my art, which is why I don't really like anyone just willy-nilly using it, because I pay for it in a sense that allows me to use the licensing for promotion, just like a company would for a poster or something like that.
Copyright.
And I make sure that person charges me that, even if they're brand new, because that's what they should be doing. And I'm, Yeah, so it's happened a few times, but I want to make sure that everyone is getting paid, because if you pay your artist properly, they've got more time to work on your art rather than trying to take a million pieces of art and work with a lot of clients and overfilling their schedule and just burning out. Mm. So
yeah, that's a good perspective to come from. And then, yeah, like really great for the people that are big fans of your books and do want to pay to support the art that's created about them.
Well, yeah, so everyone on my Patreon goes to funneling towards artists, which means that they're helping a whole bunch of other people make a living off what they're enjoying doing. And I love that. I love the pay it forward and the unity of that, because it really just, it goes really nice hand in hand, knowing that one artist is working with a different kind of artist. And like, I'm also working currently with a dildo manufacturing company.
Amazing.
Which is a different kind of art form.
Incredible.
And so we're building, and now I'm working with narrators, which is a different art form. So like, it feels very creative to have all of these people working with you.
Yeah.
Are you creating a tentacle deck? Yeah.
Well, so who I'm working with, they already have. Sorry. They already have a tentacle dick, yeah. But mine will be the generic Dusk Walker for Orpheus.
So. Purple.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see it.
Me too. I'm very excited to see it. They did a test pour, and we weren't happy with the girth. They were like, no one's gonna fit this, so we're making it a bit smaller.
Okay, yeah.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah, we don't have any gut rearranging magic in real life. Yeah,
unfortunately.
Oh, that's
all right. Fun. What were we up to? I think book Merrick. You like to mirror the job scene with the tentacles.
Yeah, that one was my favorite. With Revive, I really enjoyed writing. Oh, what scene was it? Look, the anal scene was fun. Uh-huh. That was a lot of fun to write. And with Revive, he is the horny Duskwalker, so like all of his scenes were fun to write. Like the titty fucking scene. Yeah. But we finally get one of those, and that was very exciting with a whole pearl necklace. And everything.
Yeah, so beautiful.
That book may not have had a lot of spice for being the horny Duskwalker, but the spice was spicy.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was like saturated in the scenes that there was spice. Like they were long scenes, yeah. Which is good. Yeah,
yeah.
And what about
and then Steel?
The final one, the last one that's out so far, Soul of Steel.
So, because it's MM, I got to play in a very different way. This is major spoilers for everyone who hasn't read it, but I know a lot of people have been hoping for this, but there is a same fucking scene.
Yeah.
A what fucking scene? Yeah. I missed what you
scene.
Said.
Scene. You know how they have
scenes. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So there is one of those, and we get to see how tentacles work with dick and all that. Amazing.
Yeah.
So that is that book was fun to write for that reason, even though it was a very long
book. I think it's almost 700 pages on my Kindle, I think.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Just
under. Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah.
It's massive. It's a very long book. I've had a couple of people comment that like there's some people aren't very happy with the middle. But people are forgetting that the reason why the book is so long is because they restart halfway through. Yeah. I don't want to give spoilers, but like they restart halfway through, and it's technically two stories in one. Mm-hmm. And it's seeing how just changing the environment and changing the person's thought pattern can really heavily influence the way a relationship can shift, which is really good way to explain that not everyone likes every bride or every partner that comes in the books that they read. And it literally just comes down to the environment that started from it. Like, people love Gideon in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, they love the kind of person he is. But then when we get to halfway, they're like, well, now I'm upset with him. And it's like, okay, but you loved him earlier. Yeah. He was your favorite earlier, but now suddenly, like, you have to understand that there's a reason, like, the book is so long, and there's a reason why you suddenly don't have that feeling, but you had it once, you know it'll happen again.
Yeah, yeah. When I was reading it, it got to, like, around 40%, and I was like, they're really happy right now, everything seems to be going really well, I wonder what'll happen.
Yeah.
What else? Oh yeah, so if you could pick one of the Duskwalkers, one of the Mivka to be with in real life, who would you pick?
I never answer that question. It's so hard. But I will say I am writing the next book, A Soul to Protect, currently. And that Duskhawker, when he comes out, he's probably my favorite.
Okay.
To be quite frank with you, in all senses. I would not, I did not think, like, for me, Orpheus is the OG. Mm. Like, I absolutely adore him. He's my baby. You know, he started it all. And so I have a very special relationship with Orpheus, but there is something about the next character where I'm just like,
I was thinking about this too, like when I emailed you the questions, I was like, what one do I like the most? But they are all so different and so individual. Like, they all have those, like, sort of behaviors that seem to be, you know, common amongst the Dustwalkers, but they're all like, some of them are sweet, some of them are more angry. Like, Merrick's super angry but really protective. And it's like, would I like that in real life, or would I want something that was really, really sweet but maybe like a little bit dumber?
They're all so innocent.
I like Merrick.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you saying?
I was saying, like, when I've only read the first one, but from what I picked up, their innocence is the sweetest thing about them, because they're kind of dumb in that way.
Well, yeah, except Merrick is very, he has a lot of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has moments where he, like, just doesn't understand humans, but he is cynical as
he's so
cynical. He's so jaded. He's so angry. He's spiteful. He's an asshole. He's a bastard. Like, in some cases, you're like, this is an evil person.
Wow.
And then he's like chasing after his bride. Like, that's just like, it's like, he's evil to everyone else, you know.
I also like that, Merrick's the one with, like, the dad bod. Like, that kind of fits his personality somehow, that he's, like, the one that's, like, a little bit shorter but, like, real stocky with, like, a belly.
Yeah, he has little man syndrome. No.
How many books will there be in this series?
So there will be 8 Dustwalkers, and then there'll be a prequel featuring Wilder and Linwy.
Mm-hmm.
And that will likely be a duet, because, as we all know, I can't write a small word count for some weird reason. So that'll likely be a duet. So by the end of the series, there'll be 10 books.
Wow.
But 8 will only be of the Dustwalkers.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah.
That's awesome.
When was it that you first started releasing them? It wasn't that long ago, was it?
2022. I believe.
Yeah. So what, that's 6 now in the beginning of 2024. Jesus Christ, you've really been pumping them out.
Yeah, I'll double check that just quickly, because it was either 2000, I'm pretty sure it was 2022.
Yeah.
Because
June 16, 2022.
Yeah, because I remember when.
Fucking hell, that's a year and a half.
They started blowing up in, like, the book groups. And we're all like, oh my gosh, what is this?
When we first joined Bang Book Club, and everyone was like, give us more tentacle dick! And we were like, what?
What is going on?
Like, who is this woman?
Yeah, I
release every 4 months.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Every time we speak to an author that has a releasing schedule like that, it's just so wild that you can pump out such good content in such a short amount of time.
I'm pretty lucky. Like, I used to be able to write books in 2 weeks. Like, I wrote A Soul to Keep in 2 weeks.
Man.
Which is insane. Like, I can't even do that anymore.
That must have been, like, I had a lot really of time in there, though. For you to be able to push it out in 2 weeks, the story must have been, like, gnawing at you.
Yeah, I was also going through a really, really tough time at that period. And I used my books as A Soul to Keep as a massive escapism. So for me, it was very therapeutic to write, and I could not do anything else.
Yeah.
My dad had just passed away, and so, like, I was just ignore reality, time to write. Yeah. And that's how I got through that book, and which is why, like, I didn't have work for 3 weeks, because I was going through a grievance period. And so, yeah, I just ignored everyone, my husband, my dogs, my parents, like, my mum, sorry, my brother, everyone. I just went, leave me alone, and I was just in there, and I wrote, and I think that's how I got through that. So
yeah, kind of, yeah, like an emotional, like, catharsis sort of thing.
Yeah, like when you have something that's really gripped you and it's helping you to drive you away from other things, you'll be surprised what you can get out.
Oh, nice. Are you able to give us any hints about the next book, or is it still a wee bit too early yet?
Well, I at the end of the ebooks, I actually have little notes from the authors that detail, like, thank you for reading the book, this is how I felt writing it. But at the very end, I always give like a little hint. Yeah. And I made this one pretty easy. At the end literally says, the next book he starts with N and ends with Svexi, which is a general snake hiss. Yeah. So.
Ah, oh, nice. Good.
Yeah. Good. So it'll be the snake Mavgar, yeah. Which is why I'm a bit excited.
I was super excited when you wrote about him, and then he was aquatic. I was like, nice, because you know, like some of them have had like fish scales and fins before, but I was like, this one has gills, aquatic. I love aquatic monsters. It's like my
thing. Like, this shit. this is so wild. Your imagination is wild. That's incredible.
I even like whenever I play like video games or anything like open world, then I'll always like go in the water. Like I have to. Like,
oh yeah, we
see what it's like in the water.
We're playing Hogwarts Legacy. You spent like an hour trying to find a giant squid.
I was just swimming around in the lake. Like that's all I'll do.
I'm guessing when you were younger, you were the one that was always like, let's play mermaids.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh my god.
Same.
Playing H2O.
Like, oh god, you love H2O the water. Lived off of it.
For people who don't know, that was a TV show about mermaids.
It's the Australian TV show.
I think, yeah, that's a very Australian show. And that's we really got the whole let's play mermaids in a whole TV show.
Yeah. Just thought it was like a formative experience for like girls of a certain age.
You
like,
were either sad or happy. There was one or the other. Yeah. You were like, you didn't want to be Saddle Club.
Yeah. Horse girl.
Yeah, fuck no.
For our listeners out there who maybe haven't read the Dustbooker Bride series or have seen it and want to start reading it, do you have a general overview that you would like to give about the series?
Well, the series is about monsters, so be wary going in. I do warn everyone with a soul to keep, which is why it always makes me giggle when someone goes, I couldn't read it, then I couldn't get over this, go ahead. And it's like, it's in the introduction, it's on the cover. It's about monsters. The book, a lot of people have stated that they come for the smut and stay for the plot. A lot of the book is internal plot, so... No, there's no, you know, laser beams and explosions and, you know, we've got to run for our lives from one end of the book all the way to the end. But it is a lot about internal plot and a lot about fighting human battles in a very fantasy-orientated fiction novel. And I like to go with representation. Like, there are different kinds of people to represent. You know, from Delora, who's plus size and facing heavy depression, all the way to, you know, disability representation and body image issues. And, you know, there's just a wide range of different things that I want to represent in a way that is healthy, which is why I get a lot of sensitivity readers. So... Yeah, there's a lot of plot. There's a lot of demons. It's like a horror fantasy smut crazy book.
Yeah.
The plot is amazing. We've spoken about it a few times where the plot is just so captivating. And
yeah,
like, personally, tentacle dick doesn't do it for me, but the plot kept me so, like, into it. And it was incredible the way that you wrote it. The first book, it was unreal.
Yeah, well, the whole series has an overarching plot, so we are moving forward. And I had to put a note in A Soul to Steal just because I had a lot of MM readers go, I want to read this. Can I start off with this book? I had to put a note, like with how many people were saying it, I had to put a note in the beginning of the book going, you will not understand this book if you have not read previous books.
Yeah.
Basically,
like most relevant for that one, especially since it is kind of, does have like a sister book before it that's super relevant to it.
Oh, okay.
Well, basically from Assault to Guide, essentially, because there's a lot of what happens in Assault to Guide that is relevant to what happens in A Soul to Steal. And so it's not a book that can be skipped to, but I have written it in a way that it is skippable. It doesn't have, except for the afterworld, we don't have a lot of world-building details. So it is a book that if, because I write predominantly MF, I know that that's what my readership is mainly is. So I wanted to write something that would give people the option to move on without having to read it if that's not what they want to read. But it is not a book that people who solely write MM can read and understand. And so I had to put a note at the beginning of the book going like you won't understand. And that's why, like I say, that there's very much a heavy overarching series plot.
Yeah.
Especially for that book. Like all the others you can kind of skip if you plan to skip A Soul to Steal. But if you don't, like you won't understand.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm very nervous. So like I said, I'm writing the next book, Soul to Protect, currently. But then the book after that, I have it in my head. I've had it in my head for quite a while. And it's tying up the series. And so I'm very nervous about writing it.
Yeah.
Especially because it'll be very plot orientated and it's going to be a very complex book to write.
Is that one probably going to be another long one?
I'm hoping not. I start every book this is going to be shorter.
No, I like that. I'm putting that there. I like it when authors write long books because it's more content, takes longer to read. It's more immersive. So just write as much as you like. Just give
it. But your descriptive language is incredible. So even if it is a long book, you're just so invested in it and you can see yourself in that world that it's like, it's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even notice.
Cool if it's a long. Go as long as you want.
Yeah.
Do the thousand.
I have people saying the opposite.
Mark. Let's do it.
No, so here's the thing with Amazon, they cap their printing at almost 800 pages when it comes to the paper type that I have, which is why, like with A Soul to Steal, the book is thick. If you get the paperback, it's thick. I've actually formatted it differently to the other books so that more words fit on a page because I needed to get the page count down so that I wouldn't go over, because Amazon won't let you print if you go over a certain amount.
That's the first that we've heard of it, but that's crazy because you'd think like it would all kind of be fine because I'm assuming they just use machines and stuff for printing and print to order, so
it really makes a difference when you write when you select white or cream paper. Mm. Like there's just a jump for some reason, and so I went cream paper because I didn't want it to be on white for the series. I had to get the word, I had to push it onto more pages.
Nice. This is our final question that we like to ask all authors that come on the series, but do you have any advice for aspiring female authors out there, people that might want to get into writing?
So there was a quote that I discovered a little while ago, and it's pretty much my favorite quote, and it's the quote that I use whenever anybody asks me that question, which is, you can edit a poorly written manuscript, you cannot edit a blank page. So write, just get the words on the page. Like your first draft will be garbage. My first draft is garbage. Like it the amount of times I've looked at a sentence and gone, that is not English. Like what have I written here? You know, like writing is complex and it can take so long, and you just need to get the words on the page. You can edit a poorly written manuscript. You can edit garbage. You can edit stuff that doesn't make sense. I have to do it every time I write a book. My first draft takes me so long to get through because I'm just like, I don't even know what I was saying. You're gonna have those moments. So just write, just get the words down, and then you can polish it. You can make it beautiful. You can get rid of inconsistencies. Once you have it all that is no longer in your brain and you've word vomited onto a page, you're good to go. So you just gotta write. My other advice is, and this is not for every author, but it works for me, and I find it really helps when it comes to imposter syndrome and anxiety and nitpicking yourself. Don't look back. Don't edit back. Like, just go forwards. Only edit back about a chapter, and that is if you have not been at the manuscript for a while. Like, I stopped writing for the past week because I had to go to a book convention, and I had a guest here during that time. So, like, I was not able to get to my book. So I read back two chapters so I could get back into the feel of the book before I went forward. But I write chronologically in order, and I sit at my desk every 12 to 16 hours a day and I just write.
Fuck me.
And so It's I'm obsessive. I'm a workaholic. There's a reason why, like, I write so many, like, I write books, big books in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And it's because, like, I'm not at my computer 6 to 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours a day. It's 12 to 16 hours a day. I'm at my computer obsessively. Yeah. So, like, that's where my big word count comes from. I'm just there a lot more. Mm-hmm. But what was I saying?
You read back two chapters.
Yeah, so, like, I read back two chapters, but that's just to get back into the feel of the characters, get back into the feel of the book. But then I just move on. Like, I don't go start from the beginning. I know the story. I know what's going to happen, and I just go from there. Just go forward. You go back, you're going to give yourself heartache because, like I said, you will write sentences that don't make sense.
Yeah.
And then you feel like you're a bad writer when really you just haven't finished the book and polished it.
Nice. Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah, to just
I feel like it applies to, like, everything. Because, like, if I were to read over my academic writing, I would be like, oh, okay, I shouldn't do this. I don't know anything.
Yeah. Like, it's just the more you do it, the stronger the muscle will be. You know, it's like I said earlier, like when I had issues reading as a kid, the more I did it, the better I got. Yeah, it was a struggle, but I got there in the end. Mm. Yeah, I was 2 years behind everyone else, but now I'm an author, yeah. You know, like it's,
yeah.
You know, not every journey is straight. Sometimes it's a wee, big wavy line, and you have to keep going and keep pushing forward. And yeah, with books, you just got to get to the end, and then you can go, God, this is hot mess, let's fix it.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps as well now, like with the rise of more like independent publishing. If you do write a book, you know, you don't have to take it to a major publishing house and try to get it published. You know, you can talk to freelance editors and proofreaders and kind of sort it that way. So it's a lot more accessible for a lot of people now.
Definitely. I have a funny relationship when it comes to working with people I don't know. Mm-hmm. When I first released The Soul to Keep, it had so many errors in it. And going back, once again, I'll say it again, I had a reading and writing disability as a kid. It's like my writing comprehension and my reading comprehension are two different things. I never notice when an author has made a mistake in a book. It's very rare. And then people will be like, this is full of errors. And I'm like, but I just read pretty words.
I'm the same. I'm so the same. Hey, the girls will be like, there were so many errors in this. And I'm like, but the story.
The story, yeah. You know, and so for me, like, I have been through 5 editors, and I unpublished an entire series because of editorial mistakes, despite having 2 editors for it. Like, I paid 2 people to edit the series, and it was still a hot mess. Mm. And so when I switched over to A Soul to Keep, I was starting with a new editor. And I've had 3 for this series so far. A Soul to Keep has been edited 3 times. And there's still apparently minor, like, grammatical errors in it. And I've just gotten to the book where it's like, it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to fix it anymore. And I have an audiobook out with it. So I'm facing that battle. And then from A Soul to Heal onwards, I hired my 3rd editor to go over it all again. Yeah. And we're working with freelance people, it's better to work with someone that it's given to you via recommendation. Yeah. And even then, they may not even be perfect. And it's just people forget that I'm human and that the editor is human. Mm. And then that we're human, you know, and that sometimes our reading and writing comprehension levels can be different to someone else's. Like, someone who may be more nitpicky might pick up on mistakes that aren't even there. Mm. You know, like, some people don't believe in the Oxford comma, and then some people do. And that is not an error. Even though I think it is, I'm Oxford comma all the way, but it's technically not an error. It's a grammatical style choice. And that's where a lot of people forget. And so like I said, with A Soul to Keep, I've gotten it to a point where an editor has gone over and she goes, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with this book, but people have issues with it. And it's like, well, that was a grammatical style choice. Yeah. It's a word style choice. Like, Dust Walk is being capitalized, but Humans not being capitalized. It's a style choice.
Yeah.
And so therefore, if the author consistently does it, it's no longer an error. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of newbie authors and a lot of people who are new to the industry get really dismayed by readers that are rather harsh, And I feel like at that point you're not reading for enjoyment. You're reading to just absolutely annihilate someone.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, when I go on Goodreads and I see that the person rarely gives anything higher than 3 stars, I just go, you're not reading for enjoyment anymore. You're reading to just nitpick and have a terrible... You want to have a terrible time. That's why you're there, to have a terrible time.
We follow one chick on Goodreads who only gives out 1 stars, except for, like, 3 books where she's given out 5. And her reasoning's just so funny.
This is just so...
She's wild.
We don't know why.
Well, like, that's what I mean. Like, it... Well, that's what I mean. Like, at that point, you're not reading for enjoyment. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. There are some books that I don't like. Yeah. You know, there are some, like, you're not going to like everything. Sometimes it literally just comes down to word usage. Like, I've had people tell me that they don't like the word squelch.
Yeah.
But what I love about that. The word and... What I love about the word and what I love about writing it is one of the most vivid words in the terms of sound, touch, and feel. Like, you can see it, you can hear it, and you can feel it when you hear the word.
Yeah. It's like everybody knows what a squelch is.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I mean. And so it's such a strong, powerful word. But then there are other word choices where I'm just like, absolutely not. And so, like, I had to learn to get over that. Like, I used to hate the word, the cunt, the C word. I used to hate it in books. I was like, how dare you? That is offensive. And now I write.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's literally just coming to the fact of accepting things, you know. Yeah.
I
noticed in the beginning of your books, you also put a little disclaimer about being Australian. Australian English.
All Australian authors do, because they just get shat on for all their grammar all the time.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Whenever we speak to an Australian author, they're like, stop sending us shit about our grammar. We're speaking Australian English.
I had someone literally message me going, oh my God, you're the worst writer in the world. You don't even know how to spell colour.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Are you kidding? It's colour. Like, colour... That is, like, the first word you think of when you think about, like, UK and, like, it's colour, realise. They're the two words that you're, like, immediately, that's a different, like a different kind of English. And they sent it to me and I was like, wow. And then someone else sent to me going, you don't even know what the word smelt means. And it's like, well, you obviously don't know that it actually has 4 meanings. Mm-hmm. It can mean small fish, it can mean smelt, or it can mean past particle of smelled, you know, and then there's a fourth one I can't remember, but like misspelt, lent, bent, you know, there's another way to write. And then every time, I think this one had been flagged to Amazon about 6 times, which is why I've stopped using it now, which is the word maneuver.
Oh, for fuck's sake, because it's got a U in it.
It's completely different. It's got 2 U's in it. And so, like, it was in a Salter Keep. And, yeah, I shit you not, it's been flagged about 6 times.
Do you know people are so passionate about the word maneuver?
I don't know, but can I say something? Looks weird. Do you know what gets me, though? English came from England. So why is it that the Americans are getting upset about the U's, which they removed? They were there in the first place.
Well, like, I actually found out why they have that. It's because printing was so expensive to have more letters that they actually got rid of letters in order to make printing cost cheaper.
Of course, which it was a capitalist decision.
Fucking hell, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I don't really understand why they made everything with an S with a Z then, you know, realize. I think maybe because it sounds like it, but like... Yeah. The English language, you know, there are words that don't make sense in it.
Yeah,
you know, there, and there. Yeah. You know, but like, that's what I mean. Like, I get pointed out for having mistakes in my series, but like, some of them might be, and I'm human, and that's allowed. But like, are they all mistakes, or are you just nitpicking?
Mm.
Are you wanting to see an error? You know, did I miss an Oxford comma? Fair enough. My writing style is changing every book that I release. And I feel like a lot of baby authors end up throwing in the towel for this. And they could be the next, you know, Sarah J. Maas. Mm. And you're just shitting on their parade.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. You know, like, that too, because, like, with, like, because obviously I, in New Zealand, we pretty much just use Australian English, UK English. And I don't notice it when I read books in American English. Like, so it's funny that, like, you know, people from the UK and Australia can read stuff that's written by American authors without, with very little problems. But then the other way around always seems to be the...
It's literally always problematic for every single Australian author that we've ever had on. But it's also that we're also brought up very Americanized, right?
Yeah, that you're exposed to a lot of American
culture. We're so exposed to both of them that we know when we have to... And when, like, you buy a computer in Australia, you have to change the language because it's immediately American. So, like, you know, there's... And it, even when you do that half the time, it tells you that you're spelling it wrong and tries to throw a Z in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just kind of used to it, I guess.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to start dictating to my books because I'm just, I'm quite burnt out. I wonder why. I'm a bit tired. I'm a bit burnt out. And so I wanted to kind of sit in this chair, close my eyes and dictate. Apparently not. My Australian accent, the computer says no.
You're an accent. Shut up. Not even like a really thick Australian accent.
Yeah, but I sound like I'm talking through my nose half the time. Oh. So like it just doesn't want to understand me. And so like I tried to write Nathair, which is the, you know, a character of the book, and it just went Nuthair, and I just went, I give up. No, I'm not dealing with the fact that I have to edit every time I say the main character's name.
That would be irritating if it's spelling it like phonetically as you say, because it's a word that doesn't exist, right? So it's
like I wrote Orpheus and I got Orifice.
Nice.
So like, I gave up at that point because it also autocorrects for you. So like it comes up with jumbled Scrabble and then it autocorrects for you, and I just went,
yeah, it's not gonna work.
not good.
That's so fucking funny.
That is funny.
All right.
Yeah. So it's complicated. Writing is complicated. Publishing is complicated. I have had so many issues, and like it just is what it is. Yeah. You know, people will either accept you and love what you write, or they won't. And you can't really get bogged down when they don't. You know, that's each their own. Like I had someone in A Soul to Revive. I only read my reviews during arcs. I refuse to read beyond that because it's always mean and I look scary, but I'm actually a soft little mushroom. And someone gave up at 5% and I just went, you don't even know what's going on.
No, how can you know if you like the book? You haven't even started yet.
Yeah.
5% is just a trigger warning in author's notes.
Yeah, and so like I feel like unless you, for me, I'm a big believer in get to the 30% mark, because you don't know, like 5%, the characters haven't even met.
Yeah,
like they had not met at this point. They gave up because they didn't like how I wrote something, I wrote it for a reason. So like you can't get bogged down by negativity. Yeah. Like some people just don't want to. They don't want to be happy in your story. So let them go, and you'll find the people that are.
Yeah, I think, and your books are a good example of it because they are, like, you know, the genre, like, fantasy, monster, smut, like, they are very specific genres, but there is an audience for them. So it is, you can find your audience.
Yeah, and there's also stories about fucking a door and...
read that last week.
People will read it.
That was our last week episode.
I love Viera. I love.
Dude, it was a wild.
You know... The thing with Viera is that she writes some outlandish shit, but fuck does she write it?
That's what we were saying.
That's what we said.
It's written so amazingly. We were like, how did she manage to fit a story in this?
Yeah.
We decided this season we've all got like red cards that we can pull. So that was Betty's red card. Like just books that the other two have to read.
Like, yeah, that's what I mean. Like there is a reader for everyone.
Yeah.
You just gotta find them.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really nice chatting with you. And yeah, everybody who hasn't gotten Soul to Steal yet, that came out on the 21st of February, I think it was it?
Yep.
Yeah. And keep an eye out for the next one, Soul to Protect.
Yes.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
No, I've had a great time. As you can tell, I like to talk.
That's good.
That's what we love.
Good trait for a podcast.
Yeah. They're sick of our shit. They want to hear yours.
Yeah. And next week, I think we're talking about All Roads Lead Here by Mariana Zapata.
I'm so fucking excited. I'm so fucking excited. It's not even funny.
Yeah. All right.
Whose week is it? I don't even think it's my week, and I'm so fucking excited.
Yeah, it's my week.
I know. Yeah. I'm so excited.
All right, bye guys.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Girls Who Read Porn. Follow us at Girls Who Read Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And for all business inquiries, please send us an email on girlswhoreadporn@gmail.com. Art created by Jessica Wanny and music made by Dane Forgy Stevens. See you next week and stay smutty, team.